Thanks for checking out this bonus interview with Vincent Puglisi for Chapter 5 of Performance Driven Giving. My name is Kent Sanders, and I'm a writer who collaborated with David Hancock and Bobby Kipper on the book. Just a quick note before we get to the conversation. You may notice that these interviews have a bit of a different feel than what you're used to hearing on a podcast interview or another setting. The reason is because these have been edited for clarity and flow to let the material on giving really shine through. We appreciate you checking this out and hope you enjoy this conversation with Vincent Puglisi. Okay, should we dive in here?
Let's go.
Okay, so I'm just gonna go through these. So you write about the hour of giving in Freelance to Freedom, and you talk about this often in the Total Life Freedom community on podcasts and elsewhere. Of course, I know what the hour of giving is, and I practice it myself. But for the sake of the book, what is the hour of giving, and how does it help you be a better human and a business leader?
Yeah, it kind of came up where I was typical. I was getting up, what are my goals? What am I going to get done? You know, just like anybody would tell you, set your goals, go after them, achieve it, don't get stopped. But I was very self-involved. It was all about me. And the work that I was doing was all relating back to what I would achieve. You know, it was helpful to other people a lot, I guess, but it really was about me. It was all about one way or the other, what I'm going to get from it. And the hour of giving came when I realized how selfish my approach was. It really is what it came from. And learning and studying generosity and becoming a person that I wasn't. I'm not a naturally, I hate to say it, I'm not a naturally generous person. Ken Hoops is a naturally generous person. From 8 years old, it's who he was. I wasn't. I grew up in a culture where you get what you got to get and you knock people out of the way to get it if they get it. And that's just the world that we live in. And if you don't, you're soft and you get eaten alive. Literally, come from that's not literally, you're gonna get eaten alive, but you will get trounced. So you come from that, and it's like, let me get what I gotta get. And I accomplished so many of the things that I wanted to accomplish, and it was very empty. It was very empty. It was basically I won, and I got to tell my stories, and everybody nodded along, but I wasn't making an impact on anybody's life. I remember that with photography. Everybody wanted to hear the stories about sports and WWF and traveling. But after that was done, nobody was very interested in me. And it was hard to see. It was very much like, okay, you're the one that does these cool things, but we don't really, I had no impact on people's lives. And that's where the hour of giving came in. Instead of starting it off with what I want to get, I'm going to start it off with what other people need and want. All the things that I wanted for myself, do for other people first. It was really, you know, almost biblical, right? Like everything I wanted, like go ahead and turn around and do it for other people. So I said, what do I want? I said, well, I'd love for people just to reach out to me without expecting anything. So these are the things that just popped in my head. Not a message of like, hey, Vin, great to hear you. Hey, could you get me on the sideline for the Steelers game? Which do you get? You know, I want book reviews. I want people. Well, maybe I should leave some book reviews, right? Before wanting it. I want whatever, downloads to my podcast. I want clients. Whatever it would be, I want acknowledgement. So many people are just craving acknowledgement. They might have the money or they might think they want the money, but they don't feel acknowledged. They don't feel appreciated. So I basically built it around that. And I listed all the things out that I'd want and that other people would want. And I just started doing those first. And it felt so good to just have people say like, I just appreciate you reaching out to me. And there wasn't, and I'd even get people like, what are you looking for? And I'm like, I'm not looking for anything. Like you're just reaching out to me. And it made me realize how rare it was, because what happened is my inbox would start blowing up when I would do this. I'd send these messages, they send them back. We go back and forth. But when I didn't do it, when I stopped doing the hour of giving, my inbox got quiet. And what I realized is I got the responses because I started it. I initiated it. People just aren't inclined to do it. I'm not saying they're bad people. I wasn't a bad person. We're just not taught to be generous. Just not taught it. So I got to have the conversations rolling by initiating it and doing all the things that I wanted for myself, to them, for them.
I love that. That's great. That's fantastic. So a big part of this chapter is talking about giving in your marriage and your family, which is a topic I've never really seen addressed very many places before.
Yep.
What tips would you have for somebody to make giving and generosity a bigger part of their marriage relationship?
It's a great question, because I think I can give a very typical answer of just be more thoughtful, be more attentive. And I think a lot of people can do that. But what I learned, and I don't like to turn everything back to business, but what I learned was by being better in my career, meaning freeing up time and gaining that time, money, location, freedom, like I talk about, it made me a more attentive, more generous husband and father, because what it did was it freed up so much more time that I didn't have otherwise. So it sounds kind of selfish. Oh, make your business better, free up more time. But now I'm sitting here talking to you and my kids are running around the pool while we were here in Florida for 3 months. And that's only because we focused on the business to build the life that we wanted. Then everything opens up, because then I can go for a 3-hour bike ride with them and we can talk about whatever, or I can, you know, my wife can go out food shopping and not worry about what the bill is. So that stress comes down. I can be there. Now it's harder for us. We homeschool and we don't have babysitters. So we don't have the same flexibility as a husband and wife to just be able to cut off and have, you know, date nights as much, but you trade the good for the bad. But what I learned is I wasn't able to be generous when I was strapped. I wasn't able to be attentive when I was struggling with money or time. I was able to do that once I freed so much better. Once I freed all that stuff up, because it's not about the money in terms of the business, it's about the freedom. And that allows me to do all those things. So it's kind of a backwards. So when people kind of go to me like, oh, it's focused on business and I'm focused on the family, I'm like, no, this will get you a better family.
I love that. Now, specifically with kids, are there any specific things that you and Elizabeth have done as parents to try and help your kids to be more giving and generous?
Yeah. Kids are naturally selfish, right? I was. We all are. So it's a constant but it's a lot of conversation about how we're approaching other people, how we're coming across to other people, how we're being thoughtful, how we're being, you know, as Andy, manners equals money. You know, manners is important. Manners is important how you come across to people. So generosity to us is even with them in terms of their work. In terms of doing work and they earn, we have giving in there. We have, you know, giving their money is very important. Giving their time is important. When we're home, we go to the homeless shelters and the food shelters, and they, you know, they're 15, 13, and 9, and they go there and they help out and they make lunches and they take the garbage out, they sweep the floors, because they have to understand that they've got a very good life. And even if they didn't have a very good life, generosity, like we talk about, is a key component to appreciating the things that you have in life and being a good contributor to society. So every Christmas Eve, it was really kind of cool. We would, you know, Christmas is one of those things where it was all about what gifts am I getting? What gifts? And I got tired of it. I got tired of, like, I'm not talking for a month about what you're going to, you know, what you might get or what you want. So what we did was every Christmas Eve, we made a tradition where we go out and we take a lot of money and candies and candy canes and we wrap them up and we just go to poor neighborhoods or rough neighborhoods. And we just give out money. And the kids at first were like, what are we doing? And then they loved it. And by the third year, Andrew came up to me and he goes, Dad, he goes, I actually like Christmas Eve better than I like Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that was huge, because he enjoyed, there was a woman that was, I'll never forget it. We were in Pittsburgh. It was freezing. We came out of church and we went to go do the money thing. And she was in a wheelchair and in a bad part of town and riding, it's dark, it's 8:30 at night, and riding her wheelchair by herself. She had no shoes on and it was freezing. And so the kids can't comprehend, like, she came out of seven, what kind of life is she having where she's coming out and she has no shoes on and no socks on? So we pulled up next to her and we gave her, I think it was $20 out of the, you know, with the candy cane. She was like crying, thankful. They're like, give her another one. We drove away, like, give her another one. And we kept stopping, like, every 10 feet, like, give her, like, somebody, like, give her, I don't know how much we gave her, but we kept, like, wanting to give more. And to see that life, and the same night, we went down the street in Dormont, which is an area by Pittsburgh, not a great area, some of it, and we pulled over to give some woman a Christmas gift, give her some money and candy, and she started crying, and she said, nobody's ever given me a Christmas gift before.
Wow.
And for the kids to hear that, you know, I don't think it always sinks in immediately, and it did there a little bit, but it's the repetition and the consistency of hoping to think that way. So
that's powerful. That's really powerful.
Thanks. Thanks.
Something else that we're talking about in this chapter is, so this whole chapter is called performance-driven giving in your personal life. We're also talking about the importance of, we're using that analogy, that Jewish analogy of the overflowing cup. Dan Miller talks mm-hmm. about this sometimes.
Yep.
And two of the things that we're talking about as far as your personal life are your health and your energy and your finances. Mm-hmm. What role, and you've talked about this recently in the TLF group, is sleep and energy and health and stuff. What role does good health and energy play in helping you be at your best?
Oh, it's completely underrated. You know, you and I have talked about it at the retreat in terms of what we're eating. Like I just cut out sugar again, sugar and bread. So I'm 15 days now. I went 13 months with it a couple of years ago. And, you know, we get so wrapped up in our schedule and our time and our business and our lives and our hobbies, whatever it is, that the one thing that matters is our health. Well, I mean, one of the main things that matters is our health. And as entrepreneurs, especially, I think so many people neglect it or don't take it seriously. I still remember I was in another mastermind and it was a very interesting conversation. There was a guy who was overweight. He was very overweight. And we were talking about goals, and his goal was, I want to make $200,000 next year. And we went through the superficial conversation about how we can get him to make $200,000 the next year. And then it kind of got a little bit more open, and then he got very emotional and he said, well, I don't think people would want to hire me to get there. And we're like, why? He goes, who's going to hire somebody that looks like this? Hmm. And he pointed to himself. And it was really impactful because he didn't come in there to talk about his health. He came in there to talk about his money. That's what we're going to do. We're going to build the business. But as soon as you start breaking it down, there's so much deeper levels to it. And I never understand it, because I'll meet a lot of wealthy people especially in our photography world. And I remember one time being at a country club, and the guy there's 60 something years old. And he owns the country club and he owns the town. And he's completely out of shape and unhealthy. And I remember thinking, you won the game that most people are fighting. You won the money game. You don't stress about that. Why wouldn't you want to live longer, healthier, knowing that you, because there's so many people that don't have that. And they struggle. Like, they would love to have the freedom and security that you have, and to cut years off of your life by that, by not focusing on your health, just would boggle my mind. Because he could live 40 more years in luxury and happiness and whatever it would be, and he's giving it away because he's not focusing on his health.
Man, that's crazy.
So yeah, so for us, you know, teaching the kids well, us eating well, you know, I'm in a better mood when I'm healthier. I get better sleep. Sleep, when you read Sleep Smarter by Sean Stevenson. As soon as I read that book, I was like, I got to take my sleep way more seriously. Stop watching television at night, going to sleep earlier, getting to bed earlier, you know, getting up earlier. And, you know, I write my book first thing in the morning. So because of that, I get my book done before the kids even get up. And what that opens up for me the rest of the day. So there's so much impact from it.
So you said you cut out sugar, what, 13 days ago again?
My birthday. So November, I'm 49. So on my birthday, I had birthday cake and ice cream pigged out. And then I said, I'm not touching it for a year. So on my 50th birthday, I'm going to be in the best shape I've been in a long time. So that was a little over 2 weeks ago I started.
Have you noticed a big difference in your energy level or just how you feel even in those 2 weeks?
Not yet. The first time I did it, I noticed it. But I've done better in keeping it out, but I haven't done great in keeping it out. What I have noticed is my weight. Like literally, your clothes that you put on. Like I didn't feel like I was out overweight, but when you start putting on pants that actually start getting loose on you instead of kind of just jamming them in, within 2 weeks, it's already started wow. happening. I remember when I did it last time, people would start seeing my face. I remember being on Zoom calls and people would be like, "You look different." Like it started slimming out.
Interesting. And
yeah, just from the sugar.
Wow. Okay, I have one more question. So, and I've got more than enough material. Great material here. One of the themes that has come up in most of these interviews is the idea that many people are great at giving and they love to give, but it's more difficult to receive. You know, it's like the last law of the go-giver, stay open to receiving. How do you personally stay open to receiving in your life?
I'm bad at it. I'm so bad. I don't like it. I don't know why. It's silly, but I'm not a good receiver. I like many people will pawn it off, will push it off, even in terms of compliments. Okay, thank you. Let's move on to something else. And it's not good because it's not giving honor to the people that are giving it to you. I wouldn't like it if I gave you a comp menu. I get whatever. It would actually make me feel worse. I would actually appreciate it when I gave a compliment if the compliment was received. But yet, I don't do it the same way myself. I don't, you know, a lot of us are individualistic and we want to get it done ourselves. So receiving often feels like charity, maybe, and yeah. We don't want charity, but people love to give and we're robbing them of the opportunity to give by doing that. So I don't have a great answer for you, except I struggle with it like a lot of people.
That's been a common answer.
Is it really?
Yeah. Maybe there's a book in there somewhere that somebody needs to write on how to be a good receiver.
It is, because I think so many of us, if we're a good receiver, we feel like those people that we don't want to become, the ones that take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Right? Because we've seen so many people take advantage of it. We see so many people reach out because they want to get, and we don't want to be that. That's why we're generous. Or at least we try to be generous. But the idea of receiving is almost goes against it. So we'll actually push it off. But and I'm fine with not receiving. I'm fine with that, but I'm not fine with what I do to the people that are trying to give. Because it's actually going to make them less generous because they don't get a good feeling from it.
Yeah.
So yeah, if somebody could write a good book about that, I would read it because I need to be better at it.
Actually, I do have one more question. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this subject or this topic that I haven't asked about?
No, I love the conversation. I'm trying to think of what I love. The questions were great. It's thought provoking, especially bringing the family into it, because we can get so focused on it career wise. That bringing how we do it with the family is very important, because that's the legacy, right? That's who we're raising, and that's, you know, that's going to be the ultimate thing that we create. So maybe figuring out how to have those conversations with our kids more in terms of like the generosity part of it. I thought those were pretty solid. Those were very solid.
We hope you enjoyed this conversation with Vincent Puglisi, and hope you'll check out the other interviews and the bonus content for performance-driven giving.